trying to determine what we can learn, what we can learn as believers in the 21st century from Abraham.
Hi.
And how we can apply what we see in Abraham's life to our own. And last week, we moved on in our study of Abraham. We found that he chose to go to Egypt because he was afraid of the famine that was going to happen in the land. And he chose to go there rather than depending on the promise that God had given him. He chose to head off to Egypt, chose to lie about his wife's identity. Remember, he said to her, "Well, say to Pharaoh that you're my sister." And we know the rest of that story. But we also saw that God intervened in order that his greater purposes for Abraham and for Abraham's life might be realized. We saw that God chose to use him in a powerful way in spite of his missteps and mistakes. And so today we're going to pick up the story in chapter 13, beginning to read at verse 1. That's chapter 13 of Genesis, beginning to read at verse 1. So Abraham left Egypt and traveled north into the Negev along with his wife and Lot. You see that Lot is still with him. And all that they owned, Abraham was very rich in livestock, silver and gold. From the Negev, they continued traveling by stages toward Bethel. And they pitched their tents between Bethel and Ai, where they had camped before. This was the same place where Abraham had built the altar, and there he worshipped the Lord again. Lot, who was traveling with Abraham, had also become very wealthy with flocks of sheep and goats, herds of cattle, and many tents. But the land could not support both Abraham and Lot, with all their flocks and herds living so close together. And so disputes broke out between the herdsmen of Abraham and Lot. And at that time, the Canaanites and the Perizzites were also living in the land. Finally, Abraham said to Lot, "Let's not allow this conflict to come between us and our herdsmen. After all, we are close relatives." So as we pick up the story, apparently now the famine is over. Or the gifts in livestock from Pharaoh were substantial enough so that they could bring some of the livestock home and they could perhaps save some from themselves, sell some to somebody else. And so they had a way now of surviving the famine. But it's really intriguing here to see that Abraham, as he's returning, returns to exactly the same spot in Canaan. He returns to exactly the same spot, to the altar. Remember we talked about the altars? And Abraham had built this altar and worshipped between Bethel and Ai. And so he returns right back to the same spot. And it says here, "And he worshipped." And so what we would have here is what some would call a do-over. He's coming to a point where he's going back to where he had strayed, and he's going to restart again. In computer language, we would call that a restart or a boot, a reboot, right? How many know where the old term reboot comes from? I'll give you a little bit of trivia today. When they first started making computers, there had to be certain fundamental information that was hardwired into the computer so that when it started up, then you could feed other programs in with the floppy disks or whatever you were using. And those few lines of programs in the early days were called bootstrap. And they were called bootstrap from the old saying of pick yourself up by your bootstraps. And so when you turned the computer on, it was literally picking itself up by its bootstraps. And of course, everything in computer language has to be shortened down. We don't say application anymore, we say app. And so we don't say bootstrap anymore, we say boot or reboot. So there's your trivia for today. You can puzzle your kids and stun them with all kinds of useless information. And so Abraham realizes apparently that he's left the place where God had called him to be, and now he wants to return to the point where he had strayed and do a restart or a reboot. And once again, we can see ourselves in Abraham. God calls us to walk with him. He calls us to leave behind our silver sinful lifestyle and our sinful culture, and instead follow in complete obedience in his plans for our lives. But just like Abraham, I'm sure if your life is like my life, there are times when we get off track, maybe slightly off track, maybe somewhat off track, maybe totally off track. Sometimes we forget about his calling. Sometimes we make bad decisions. Quite often, just like Abraham or the prodigal son, we find ourselves in a bad place. But God, you know, often allows situations and circumstances come into our own lives, and yes, situations and circumstances which we bring on ourselves, he uses those to convince us to return to the place where he has called us to. Now, I'm sure that many of you have in your connection of friends and loved ones, people who are perhaps not walking with the Lord, maybe walked with the Lord at one time and now have strayed away. And I encourage people to pray for situations and circumstances that would turn people's hearts back toward the Lord. Now, some of those situations and circumstances could be quite uncomfortable, but I think that's a way that God uses to bring people back to the point where they realize they need that reboot or restart. And so hopefully, in our situation, we hopefully come to our senses like Abraham or the prodigal son, and we return to that position where we once were so we can pick up and go on with God's plan for our lives. But I want to just stop here for a minute or so and consider the price that we pay for disobedience when we step away from God's path for our lives. Perhaps it would be good to make a note of these, because when we internalize them, when we think about them, it will help motivate us to stay on track. And the first one is spiritual implications. When we stray from God's will, when we act in disobedience, these actions cannot be categorized anything else other than as sin. And sin of any kind is serious. Disobedience is rebellion against God. It must be acknowledged as such. It must be confessed and forgiveness sought. You will recall that obedience is something that God has called for from the very first words of Genesis, when he called Adam and Eve to obey his instructions and his restrictions, and he calls for obedience right through the scriptures and one time after another. And so obedience is important. And when we fail to obey, it is sin. Secondly, disobedience results in permanent loss. The time, the energy, and the resources that we spend pursuing our own plans instead of being obedient to the Lord's call in our lives are gone forever. You cannot get time back. You cannot get energy back. You can renew energy for tomorrow, but you can't get yesterday's energies back. Opportunities that might have been are forever gone. Our straying from God's plan for our lives can only be described as a loss, and it cannot accurately be measured in terms of quantity or impact this side of glory. No one knows except God how much has been lost when disobedience rules. The time that Abraham spent in Egypt was time not spent in Canaan, in the center of God's will. And who knows, for example, what God might have had in mind for Abraham to do if he had stayed in Canaan. Thirdly, there are practical realities that will always be associated with disobedience and poor decisions. Now let's think of an extreme situation in our secular context. When someone drinks and drives, for example, and through their disobedience to the laws of the land and poor judgment, when they do that and they have an accident, and worst case, they kill someone, There are practical realities associated with that. They may be sorry. They may be really sorry. They may be as remorseful as anyone has ever been. But the damage done lives on, and the scars remain. There's an old story told about a father and son. The father was having a lot of trouble disciplining the son and trying to get him to live a godly life. And so he informed the son one day that each time he found the son to be disobedient, he was going to drive a nail in the gatepost as a reminder that he had been disobedient to God's standards. And over time, maybe you can identify with this boy if you have the childhood like his, over time the gatepost became covered in nails. But just as the story of the prodigal son goes, one day the boy realized he needed to change his ways. He needed that reboot or that restart. So he asked forgiveness from God, and he asked forgiveness from his father. And then to demonstrate the forgiveness, the father took the claw hammer and removed all the nails. Wonderful story. But the boy was left with one question that became a lesson for him and a lesson for us. But Dad, what are we going to do about the nail holes? You see, there were still scars left in the post from the disobedience. And our lives are like that. When we are disobedient to God, when we act in a way that's inappropriate, when we use poor judgment, things happen. And those things cannot be undone. In spite of God's wonderful attribute of grace, indelible holes and scars remain. Fourthly, disobedience and poor judgment frequently negatively impacts our future. Abraham operated in partial obedience against God's instructions. He brings with him his nephew Lot. And even as he is returning to Canaan to pick up where he strayed from God's plans for his life, the presence of Lot continues to shape and impact his future. Note verse 6 and 7. But the land could not support both Abraham and Lot with all their flocks and herds living so close together. So disputes broke out between the herdsmen of Abraham and the herdsmen of Lot. Now listen, God promised the land to Abraham and to his seed. Lot was a relative, but he was not a descendant nor a seed of Abraham. And so because of this partial disobedience, Abraham is actually forced to divide, and listen carefully, he's forced to divide and give away part of the gift that God gave specifically to him. God had promised the entire land to him and to his descendants. And so we need to pay very close attention to this lesson. When we leave behind the things that God calls us to leave behind, we will eventually, when we fail to leave behind the things that God calls us to leave behind, we will eventually find ourselves compromising on what God calls us to do and who He calls us to be. Think about this. One of the greatest spiritual gifts that you could possibly imagine is to have the Creator of the universe, the awesome God, tailor-make and develop a plan for your life and for my life. God didn't delegate this to an angel, didn't delegate it even to Jesus. God developed a personal plan for each and every one of our lives. And when you, in disobedience, refuse to leave behind what God calls you to leave behind, you're not only disobedient, you show lack of respect and lack of appreciation for this amazing gift that God has given you, this gift of a life plan. So God's gift to Abraham here was effectively diluted, and a significant amount of his time and energy and resources would continue to be spent dealing with the problems stemming from his decision to bring Lot with him. Now, having learned about some of the impact of walking away from the Lord's plan for our lives, let's think about how we get back on track. Perhaps there might even be somebody here today that, as a result of these studies on Abraham, would realize that you're not walking in obedience and would now want to be like Abraham and get back on track. You would want to do that restart, want to redo that bootstrap. How would a person approach that challenge? Well, first of all, since disobedience is sinful and refusing to walk in God's intended path for your life is clearly disobedience, we need to acknowledge that it is indeed sin. And then we need to remorsefully seek the Lord's forgiveness. Abraham, remember, went back to the altar, back to the place where he had built that altar and had worshipped and sought God's presence. And so the first step in our personal reboot, the first step in our attempt to get back on track, is to get back to that altar. Get back to that altar, whether it's in our home or at the front of the church or wherever, and ask forgiveness and say, God, I am sorry. I walked away, I strayed, and now I need to restart. Secondly, we need to remind ourselves that the Lord is always forward looking. Recognize that there may well be scars from our disobedience that we've just talked about. And we recognize that we may well see these scars well into the future. But also recognize that God's forgiveness always orients us exclusively toward the future. The prodigal son came back home. His story was not any longer about his past. His life was not about living in the past. His life was about going forward after his restart. We cannot change what has happened. We can only learn from our mistakes and use these difficult lessons to motivate us to dedicate ourselves to God's personal plan for our lives from now on. So always look ahead. Always move forward. You know, the enemy will want to bring all of those old stories back to our mind. He may well try to use the scars around to remind us that we strayed. He will want to convince us that we can be of no or little use to God going forward. But it's a lie. God's perspective is forward-looking. The enemy's perspective is always backwards-looking. He would always point us backwards, but God always is determined to grow us going forward. Thirdly, make sure we spent a little bit of time on this a week or so ago. Make sure you spend some time making your calling and election sure. Recognize that at times God reveals his plans to some individuals with specific details, but that is not the case with everyone. And I would say is not usually the case. And you know, some people think that they have failed to hear from God because they don't have those detailed plans. They don't have those detailed step-by-step instructions for the next 20 years. But you know, it's far more likely that you are to be led one step at a time, just like Abraham. Think about God's plans for Abraham. Get yourself to Canaan. That was step number one, wasn't it? Abraham, pack up, leave everything, come with me to Canaan. Didn't say what was going to happen after that, just gave him one step at a time. What was step number two? God promised to make of him a great nation. But where was step number two? It was not revealed until it had been obedient to step number one. For many of us, perhaps most of us, God simply asks us to be obedient to step number one before he reveals us to step number two. And now we want to return to our text and examine some other details that are easily missed, but really do provide us with some great lessons about life and living it for God. Let's look again at Genesis 13, verse 3 and 4. From the Negev, they continued traveling by stages toward Bethel, and they pitched their tents between Bethel and Ai, where they had camped before, and this was the same place where Abraham had built the altar, and there he worshipped the Lord again. Now, I know I read that before, but I read it again to make a different point. I want you to note carefully the pronouns used here. The they return refers to the entire entourage. They are continuing to travel. That's Abraham, that's Sarah, that's his servants, and that's Lot. But notice the next pronoun used is he. The he refers to Abraham. It is Abraham who returns to the altar, and it is he that worships. This clearly implies that out of the entire entourage, Abraham is the only one who worships. Not particularly unusual for Sarah, since in that culture the husband was generally regarded as the priest of the family. Not unusual for the servants, since some had come from the idolatry of Haran, and some had been gifts from the Pharaoh of Egypt, as they, and if they worshipped at all, it would not be Jehovah, but the gods of the Egyptians. But apparently Lot doesn't worship either. So think about that situation for a moment. Think about why God would have asked him to leave everyone from that sinful culture behind. The reality is that he had been disobedient. This has resulted in dividing up God's gifts, and he finds himself constantly trying to work with his nephew, who obviously has radically different spiritual perspectives than Abraham himself. In chapter 3 of his prophecy, Amos asks a very important rhetorical question. He says, "Can two walk together except they be agreed?" That's an important question to keep in your mind as you travel life's journey. Here is Abraham trying to follow God's plan, bringing with him Lot, trying to follow God's plan, while he has Lot, who has really apparently nothing to do with God's plan for his life or God's plan for Abraham. And so Abraham finds himself trying to walk together with someone who is not in agreement with him. And so there's a very important lesson here. Abraham would continuously struggle to walk in God's plan because he is trying to walk in God's plan, and Lot at the same time is trying to walk in an entirely different direction. And you and I will always struggle to follow God's plan for our lives when we try to drag along relationships and people who have no interest in worshiping and following God. So let's move ahead in our study and look at a couple of other significant comparisons between Abraham and Lot. Let's go back to Genesis 13, and pick up the verse, verse 8. "Finally, Abram said to Lot, 'Let's not allow this conflict to come between us and our herdsmen. After all, we're close relatives. The whole countryside is open to you. Take your choice of any section of the land you want, and we will separate.'" Interesting that Abraham has come to the realization that the best option is to do what God had asked him to do a long time ago. "If you want the land to the left, then I'll take the land on the right, and if you prefer the land on your right, then I'll go to the left." Lot took a long look at the fertile plains of the Jordan Valley in the direction of Zoar. The whole area was well watered everywhere, like the garden of the Lord or the beautiful land of Egypt. And this was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. So Lot chose for himself the whole Jordan Valley to the east of them. "He went there with his flocks and servants and parted company with his uncle Abraham." Last week we saw the strong human instinct for self-preservation come to the surface in Abraham. He risked the purity and welfare of his wife in order to preserve himself, but now as he returns to the place of God's plan for his life and the place of worship, he appears to have learned his lesson. He's not interested about himself now, he's just interested in fulfilling that call to obedience to separate himself from Lot. And he generously offers Lot any part of the land he wants. And by comparison, we see that self-preservation instinct, that all-about-me instinct rising up in Lot, and he takes what is obviously the best part of the land. Thanks, Uncle Abraham, I'll be on my way now. In closing today, I'd like you to look carefully at these verses 12 and 13. So Abraham settled in the land of Canaan, and Lot moved his tents to a place near Sodom and settled among the cities of the plain. But the people of this area were extremely wicked and constantly sinned against the Lord. Abraham returns to the place where God was calling him. He wants to take up from where he strayed. He's in pursuit of that reboot or that restart. He's that worshiper at heart. So he moves back to the place of worship. He restarts with God's plan. He recommits to obedience. He practices, worships, and allows the presence of God to dominate his day-to-day life. By contrast, Lot makes a different choice, a choice that appears to be the most likely to increase his wealth. There's that it's all about me attitude. But it takes him away from the altar, takes him away from the place of worship, and seems that he is ready and willing to settle and live surrounded by sin and sinful cities. You see, it would appear that his heart never did make a clean break from the idolatry of Ur. Remember the original call to Abraham? Come out from Ur. Come out from that sinful place. Leave behind all of your relatives. You see, God knew that Lot was never going to be part of who he was calling him to be. So these verses challenge us to think about where we are. Are we Abraham's? Are we anxious to get back in alignment with God's plan, even if it means leaving somewhat of a lot behind? I guess that's a bit of a pun. Sorry about that. Maybe it means sacrificing some opportunities for wealth. Maybe it means sacrificing some opportunities for affluence and influence. But that's the question that confronts us with every major significant life change. Are we pursuing God's plan for us? Are we committed to the altar and to worshiping there? Are we willing to sacrifice for what God has in store for us? Or will we be those who drift away like Lot and never fully separate ourselves from the calling of the world? Lord, we thank you for your word today. We thank you, Lord, that we can learn from these Old Testament patriarchs. They were not perfect. We're not perfect. We learn from their imperfection and try and deal with our imperfection. Lord, I pray that as we study this today, if your Spirit was speaking to anyone's heart about where they are and the direction they're heading, I pray, Lord, that your Spirit's word would be firm in their heart, firm in their mind, firm in their spirit. Lord, I pray that they would have the courage to admit that they've strayed maybe a little bit away, maybe a significant part away, maybe totally away. Lord, I pray that you would call them back to the place of worship, call them back to the plans that you have for their lives. Thank you, Lord. We bless your holy name. Amen.